Can you use Sentinel oysters or other mollusks to track water quality near your cities, beaches, or maybe even the Great Barrier Reef? Hello and welcome to Tech First. My name is John Kutzier. A big focus for Tech First is what I call smart matter. It's things in our environments with chips, sensors, motors, radios. But perhaps the smartest matter is living matter, biological matter. Can we connect with that to learn more about how we can protect marine environments? According to Molluscan, we can. And here to chat is the CEO, Quino Ludovic. Welcome.
Hi, John. Thank you to welcome me on the show.
Hey, happy to talk with you. I saw your booth in CES a couple months ago. Was totally intrigued. Knew I had to chat with you guys. Maybe give us a big picture. What on earth do you do?
All right. So what we do is called biomonitoring, as we use the living to monitor the environment. And we do aquatic, you know, so water quality monitoring through bivalve mollusks. And bivalve mollusks are oysters, for example, or mussels or clams.
So super interesting. I mean, we want to know the quality, the health, what's going on with the environment, maybe near our beaches, maybe in our ports, near our cities. Also, you know, where there's regions of great biological value, reefs and other places like that. How does it work? What are you detecting? What are the mollusks detecting? And how are you seeing what they're detecting or learning what they're detecting?
Well, first, we come from a basic research in biology. And in France, in Bordeaux, we were looking for a way to understand the behavior of the animals underwater, the way they breathe, for instance. And it's not that easy, because if I try something and if I ask you if you're good or not, you know, you will reply me. Or if I test you, you know, like this, you will scream maybe and say, "Hey, come on, stop, Ludovic." Same with animals like pets, you know, but with a mussel or an oyster, it doesn't really tell you anything. So we needed to build a device to understand, you know, these animals and a device that would be non-invasive because we want to observe them without disturbing them to really understand them. And it took years, you know, more than 20 years to set up this device. And it's about understanding the movements of the animals. You know, these bivalve animals, they move like this. So they open and close, but they do very tiny movements all the time. And so we use micro electrodes that are very light, like 1 gram only outside of water. So it's like tens of a gram inside water. So the animals don't feel anything. And we measure every movement that they do. I mean, the way they open or close at a very high level of precision, the micrometer. So this is what is amazing. So we really, this way, been able to study the behavior of the animals, first in lab, you know, in tanks, just to see how they behave. And then after we moved to the wilderness, and we try them, you know, in real condition, so and in different places and different species of bivalve mollusks, depending of where we're studying. And in fact, we did it for 18 years before launching our device.
I guess that's one of the benefits of doing something in an academic environment. You can work on it until you get it right, versus kind of launch a company, raise a round of capital and have 2 years or 18 months to get it right or fail and die. And maybe all that knowledge gets lost. So I'm trying to understand what's going on here. Mollusks are filter feeders, if I'm not mistaken. So they're filtering water. They're capturing tiny bits of food, maybe plankton, phytoplankton, algae, whatever, little bits of debris from what a shark ate or something like that. And so they're obviously sensing what's in the water, so they know what to eat. And do if they sense conditions that they don't like, let's say pollution or foreign material that shouldn't be in the ocean or high concentrations of something, do they shut down more? Do they close more? What happens?
Exactly, that's what they do. And in fact, this, the idea of studying bivalve mollusk doesn't come from us. It's been an idea that many people thought about, and especially at the beginning, it was very basic. It's just understanding that when there's a problem, the animal shut down completely to protect themselves, and when it's fine, they open again. But it's like on-off, so which is a bit too basic to really understand and to rely, I would say, on this. In our case, we through our studies, we understood, we've been able to understand really the behavior of the animals. That's what I was telling you, and we were able to build a dozen of physiological, parameters of the animal. And I would give the example of, the circadian rhythm, with the sun and night. So in fact, when they sleep or when they're awake, also the growth, which is very important, understanding how they grow. So if they feed well, they grow. And in fact, this kind of animal, their skeleton is outside, the muscles and flesh is inside, skeleton is outside. And at every day or two or every tide, so 2 times a day, they build an extra layer inside, that's the way they grow. And from the inside, and they grow, slowly like this. And we're able, in fact, to measure, this layer that is very thin, that is around 1.52 micromillimeters.
Yes.
And we measure this. So it's like when you, if you have kids, and when they're just a baby, and you follow, the curve, the line, which is, with their weight and size, to be sure that they're okay. And you have these patterns that tell you they're okay because they're inside, the statistical, measure. So everything is fine. But if you see suddenly something happening in the line, that is not well, you say, oh, so, with experience at the doctor, yeah, there's an issue. We've been able to do the same. We've built some patterns about the growth, about so their circadian system, their the spawn, also, when they have contraction when they spawn, when they release the eggs, for instance, their stress also, because the normal behavior, we know it because we've been studying in a very quiet environment, the animals. So when something happens, the way they react, we can feel the stress and can feel, we can see the stress. What else? The way they open also, and close, the time they stay open, the time they stay closed, this also gives us signs about their health, and many more little things like this. It's very technical, obviously, but just to explain you the parallel with, I would say, the human being and really understanding the stress, we measure the speed of the muscle, the reaction of the muscle as well. So that gives us also a sign of good health or not. And if you combine
Amazing.
everything together, it's like, the checkup that when you go to the doctor, you test a lot of things, and you can say, yeah, things are okay, or no, you're not well, John. Something's not well with you too. So that's the same.
Amazing. So you had to study a lot so that you could sort of almost have a digital twin, almost have like a baseline parameter. This is what a healthy mollusk does. And I suppose you have to do that differently for every species because they act differently and maybe there's similarities, but maybe a little different between an oyster and a mussel or something like that, or a clam. That's really, really interesting. Now, how precise is that? So let's say there's an oil spill. I would guess they react immediately. Perhaps there's something that's a more of a little leak that slowly builds up in the environment. How precise is this? And does this tell you, hey, something's going on, come take a look, or how does it work?
Yeah, so in terms of precision, it's very precise. But the reality also, it's all about concentration, for instance, pollution. As you say, they react. Anyway, today, If you want to know if water is polluted, you will have to take a sample of water and to go to a lab to analyze, to run some tests, and then you check the concentration of the product. So what we do with the animals, and we tested that we tested them in artificial rivers as well with oil, just to see how they react depending on different level of concentration, how they react. So the sensitivity of the animals, in terms of reaction, and also in terms of speed of reaction, you know, and it's all about concentration. The reality is that they are very sensitive, and we've been able to detect with them concentration that were too low to be seen in a lab.
Wow. Impressive. So you've actually, this is not something that's just in the lab. You're doing this in the real world. Talk a little bit about some of your installations.
So during the first installation outside of a lab was in 2006. So it's already 18 years ago. So there'd been many years, you know, of lab before. And then after we went in nature to really test on different locations. So we started where we were, you know, near Bordeaux in the Bay of Arcachon, which is a very famous place for oysters.
Sure.
But we traveled a lot. I would say the extreme points to describe, we've been to in the Spitsbergen, so it's like, you know, north, you know, close to the Greenland. It's like around 1,000 kilometers from the North Pole, so it's really up north. Water temperature is minus 1.4 degrees Celsius in average. And on the other side, the other extreme, I would say, we've been to the Arabic Persic Bay as well, like Qatar, for instance, where water is very, very warm. In the summer, it's been measured at, I think, 37 degrees.
Wow.
It's, yeah. But then, and we use different animals, you know, obviously in the north, and we always use local animals, the animals that we find on location, so endemic, not to disturb, because we are biologists, it's very important not to disturb, you know, the place with bringing, you know, foreign animal. That would be a big mistake. And also, our sensors are the animals, so it's better to take, you know, the local ones. So it was a kind of you know of scallop, I would say, in the north, in the Spitsbergen, and oysters, pearl, you know, mother of pearl oysters, in the Arabic Persic area.
So you have sensors on these mollusks. How do you collect the data from them?
Yeah, so it's a mix of you know, biology, the animals, electronics. So we have sensors. And I would say an electronic card box inside, you know, close to the animals in the water that measures and records everything. So we have 16 animals. I forgot to tell you that. It's always a group of 16 animals that we study because it's statistically robust. So it means that, you know, we need this number. It's even, you know, it's big enough to be sure that the results that we get are statistically correct. And so this group of 16 animals, we measure every tenth of a second, everything that happens. And we collect this information underwater, and we bring also this information through a cable to the surface, to a second box, you know, electronic box. And then after, with GSM, you know, mobile technology, we receive the data on our servers. And then after, on our servers, we have all the statistical patterns that we have studied. I told you, you know, the normal behavior of the animal and all the parameters, the physiological parameters. So we can compare to the normal behavior. And then we have two things that we provide, which is a scale of the quality of the water, which means, you know, to be simple, healthy animal in a healthy environment. So if everything's perfect, it's like 5 stars. And then after, it's gradually, if the animal, you know, is not behaving normally, or is getting sick, or mm-hmm. you know, eventually could die, mm-hmm. then after, you know, we go down to really bad water. And it gives you a continuous, you know, follow-up of this monitoring quality of the water. And on top of it, we send alerts when we detect pollution, when the animals mm-hmm. react to pollution. As I told you, as we already tested the way they react to different kind of pollution, we know, and then we send text message to, you know, to our client and emails to tell them, okay, something's happening, for them to be able to respond very quickly. That's the key thing.
Super interesting. Is this, I've been wondering, because the ocean is a very harsh environment. It's always in motion, salt water, very corrosive. Things are not known to last a long time in the ocean. Is this a better solution than a fully mechanistic technological solution, because you're using biological matter for part of the solution?
Yes, for sure. Because, you know, today there are probes, you know, multi-parameters probes that measure, that are used. These probes, they have different sensors, you know, inside. Most of the time, oxygen level, pH, turbidity. So a few parameters like this, which is not enough, obviously, to understand what's happening, but at least it gives you some hints. The thing is, you need to clean them every 3 weeks. Because the biofouling, you know, is going, you know, on top of your sensors, and after they don't measure properly, so you need mm-hmm. to clean them every 3 weeks. So, in our case, our sensors are animals; they clean themselves. And the record that we have, for instance, in the Spitzberg, is 3 years, 9 months without intervention.
Wow. Amazing.
And in fact, we dismantled, because, you know, the we were, you know, in this place with other researchers, and this mission was finished. They asked us to dismantle, because they were going somewhere else and doing other things. So we said, yes, fine. But meaning that it could have lasted even longer.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Huh. Very, very cool. How long do these mollusks live?
So we work with different species.
Yeah.
There are, I would say, you know, and we work also with freshwater bivalve mollusks to study rivers and lakes. So that's important as well to notice this. So that's, I would say, the magic of using nature is that you can find, you know, wherever we can find a mollusk, we can study and monitor water quality. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. And so they last, what we know in average, the animals that we use last 5-7 years, if we talk about, you know, oysters, mm-hmm. for instance, mm-hmm. but we know that some of them last 20, 50, mm-hmm. even longer. Yeah. So, there's no constraints on that side.
Right. And your sensor must have a power source, I'm assuming. Is that a battery? How long does that last?
So, yeah, we use a battery, yes. But the device has been designed for a very low power consumption. It's mm-hmm. only 1 watt per hour, which is nothing. So if you put a light, you know, in a dark room, and if you put a light with a 1 watt, you would see only a little dot of light. You know, it's nothing. Yes. And this way, in fact, we can put our device, you know, so under the water, and the one outside on a buoy, for instance, with a small solar panel, it can last for years. We already have this kind of installations.
Yeah. So is this a cheaper solution than other solutions to monitor water quality?
Depending on what you do, I would say yes. Like my answer for the concentration with the way they react, it's how often do you run some tests, you know, in the water today, depending on the location. If you don't run any tests and you do it once every quarter, then our solution is more expensive, but we see everything. And if you really care about, the place that you're looking for, it's relevant. And but what we, I would say, with a real answer, we worked, we tested with on an oil and gas platform, our system, and where safety is very important, and they test every day a lot, and they calculated that for a bunch of platform for the for instance Total Energies, the French oil and gas company, it's about cost saving. It's about several million dollars of cost saving.
Interesting. And I see your point there, that it's relative to how often you test. Like if you're maybe a city and you're not too worried about this or not aware of this, maybe you test once a year, once a quarter, or once a month or something like that. Here's an ongoing solution to test continuously year round, every day, every week, every month. Makes a lot of sense. And especially in sensitive areas, makes a ton of sense. I wonder,
there is a hidden cost, which is, when we, is it cheap? Is it interesting, relevant? It's not only about, okay, we can compare at least to the cost for a municipality or for an oil and gas company. But after, there is the cost of cleaning pollution. When you don't see the pollution, then afterwards you need to clean. What's the impact, when you need to clean a river or a lake, and the impact on the health of the population that maybe were intoxicated. And then after, it's a no-brainer. Obviously, it's cheaper to anticipate and to see, what's happening continuously than after having to repair, the damage.
I totally agree with that. I could totally see that. I mean, the costs of fixing something are way more than if you detect it right away and stop it instantly or almost instantly. Absolutely. Never mind the biological impact or the health impact of having the pollution just stay there and grow. In fact, there is a creek not far from where I live. I live near Vancouver, Canada, and there's a creek in Bellingham, Washington, near where a place I used to work, and I used to walk there during my lunchtime, and there was a long-lived small crack in an oil company's gas line, and nobody saw it. Could have been months. Eventually bigger, more, and someday, somehow, something sparked, and there was a crazy fire, an explosive fire along the whole length of this stream. I'm not sure if anybody died. There were some injuries, if I recall correctly. It was about 10 years ago or something like that, but a horrific scenario. And fortunately, this is the Pacific Northwest. It's pretty wet. It's hard to start a forest fire in certain seasons, at least. So I don't think that happened. But yeah, this sort of thing does happen, has happened, and I've witnessed it as well. I want to take a second to generalize, and I know you're focused on marine biology, marine environments. Is there a world in which you think that we can generalize this technique, generalize this science, and apply it to other biomes, forest biomes, desert biomes, other places, cities even, and monitor creatures in their habitat and then get a sense of what might be happening environmentally? I assume it's very different because you're talking mollusks. They don't move. They anchor, right?
Yes. So, that's the thing, why did we choose to work with mollusks, bivalve mollusks? Because they don't move. And then after, as the key thing is not to disturb them while observing them. If they don't move, you can put sensors and it won't disturb them, and you don't have to follow, with your sensors, everything. That's why doing it on a fish would be, maybe you could say, okay, well, why not? Yeah, well, how do you put a battery and sensors on a fish and a GPS? That's complicated. I think the fish will notice that every single device on his back. So that's why it was two key things with the mollusks. They don't move on. They move a little bit, the muscles, for instance, they move, but not that much. And after, they stay together as a group, and so that's fine. So that's one thing. And second, as it's a very simple animal to study, because it's one muscle. They don't move. They move. We can With the sensor, we can measure everything, you know, through this. Because you as a human being, you have hundreds of muscles, you know, and so we would need so many sensors, so many things, you know, to capture all the information. That would be, you know, very complicated, and it would be too invasive.
Yeah.
With this animal, it's perfect, you know, this combination of they don't move, they're very simple to study, but it doesn't mean that because they're simple to study, it's not complicated to study them and it's not relevant to study them. So that's a perfect combination. And so we would need, I would say, to find the same kind of living things in different places that to do the same.
That's really hard. That's a tall order. And I'm not sure that there are land-based animals that operate in the same way. You'd probably have to go to plants, and that's a whole different ball of wax. And probably not as instant, certainly for trees and other things. But anyways, this has been fascinating. Really, really cool work. Thank you for taking this time.
Thank you, John.